Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Nisha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Stitch Duran, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show. I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bet.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
Around the world once again. This is Carson's Corner, and my name is Bob Carson. Pleased to be with you this Thursday evening. It is May 11, 2017, and we have a very, very good show for you here today. In spite of some setbacks, I actually was scheduled to be on the air at 10 p.m., which I was at 10 p.m., and what happened was the show was only scheduled for 15 minutes. So after I was going through my 15 minutes there, the show stopped because we're only scheduled for 15 minutes. Because what happened was when my guest, who was supposed to be Todd Atkins, bailed on me today, I had to edit the show. I had to cut out his picture and cut out everything. I'm going to get into that. Just absolutely disgusting what happened there. Disgraceful. And I edited the show. When I edited the show, I saved it only as 15 minutes when really we were supposed to be a two-hour show. So, you know, it was a little mishap on my part, but I was just really, really aggravated over what happened. And so that's why, you know, if you were listening live and we went off the air at 10:15, that's what happened. So we're back here at 10:30, and we have a great show for you. As always, on Tuesday we had the Bellator conference call, the Bellator 179 press conference call that I attended. I usually go to these conference calls and I usually am able to ask some questions. And this one was unique in the sense that a reporter was unfettered as far as how many questions they can ask. There was this guy named Gareth Davies. He's a reporter for some major publication, I think, some big publication in the UK. I think the Telegraph, or I don't know what it is. But he's primarily a boxing reporter, and I met him at the Klitschko Joshua press conference, and he was a very nice guy. You know, he's well known. He cited Eddie Goldman in one of his articles in the lead-up to the Joshua Klitschko fight. And the first question went to Gareth Davies. And Gareth is, like, taking, like, 15 minutes. He's asking all these questions. And I'm like, Well, that's awfully inconsiderate, because usually at these press conferences, depending upon, you know, the media that's there, how many people are there, they'll limit the reporter's questions, you know, to maybe two or maybe three or whatever. And so I started to get pissed off. I'm like, how inconsiderate is it for this guy to be asking like 10 questions? And sure enough, what happened was Bellator didn't put any restrictions on the amount of questions reporters can ask. So when I got my time to ask questions, I actually got to ask three questions, two to Paul Daly and one to Rory McDonald. And of course, we here at Carson's Corner have the most interesting questions, I think, and the best questions out there. And I'm going to play some of the audio from the conference earlier this week. It was very, very exciting. Unfortunate news, though, for the Bellator card. It looks like Michael Venom Page is out with an injury. That's really, really unfortunate, because that was one of the key fights I was looking forward to, him versus Derek Anderson. And anytime MVP fights, it's kind of a draw, you know, for Bellator. But nonetheless, this is still a very, very good card on Spike TV at Wembley Arena. And we're going to talk about it at length a little bit later on in the program. Also, hopefully in the second hour, I'm not sure, but hopefully our correspondent Dan Baker will be calling, and we will be discussing UFC 211, which is going to take place this Saturday. That is a very, very good card, and that to date is probably the best card that the UFC has brought to the fans. Hasn't been too many fight cancellations, although Henry Cejudo had an injury and had to pull out of a bout with Sergio Pettis. That was a very, very anticipated fight, and that fight's not taking place. So it's still a very, very good card. They moved up David Branch versus Christoph Jocko to the main card in lieu of that fight. We're going to talk a little about that. We got some good news regarding GSP Bisping. That's off. We got a lot to talk about. But first, you know, let me tell you, I really had some aggravation. I had to deal with some stress relating to the person that we were supposed to have on the program to begin with. Todd Atkins, he is, he was an underground personality, you know, fight sport guy. If he's an MMA journalist or what his deal was. And my involvement with Todd really stems back to his creation of the Fight Sport group on Facebook. He invited me to join this group, and I joined the group, and you've got some decent members there. You've got some really good members there, like John Peretti posts there. Eddie Goldman is a member of there, but I don't think he posts all that often. You've got Phil Dunlop, who's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu coach out of Las Vegas. You've also got Darren Roth, Winston Wolf. He posts there. Some other people that I know from the forum. And, you know, it started off as a good place to have sort of against-the-grain discussions. But now it's just devolved into, you know, Todd posting about sports just nonstop, and people just, you know, spamming it, you know, the group with different techniques. I've really kind of lost interest in it over the last month or so, but whatever, you know, Todd and I were in contact over the last, you know, 3 or 4 months, and we discussed, you know, him coming on the show in the past. And then earlier this week, he posted on one of my threads that he wanted to come on this week. So I'm like, okay, what evenings do you have available? And right off the bat, he's like, oh, you only do evenings now? I'm like, yeah, you know, we could do 10 o'clock. I usually have my shows at 11 o'clock, which we do. We have the political show at 11 o'clock, and we have the MMA show at 11 o'clock to encourage more listener, you know, engagement. He said, 10 o'clock is too late for me. How about, or 11 o'clock is too late for me. How about 10 o'clock? And I'm like, okay, no problem. We'll have it at 10 o'clock. So right off the bat, you know, I'm accommodating the guy with the time that I'm willing to do the show because I didn't have a guest scheduled. Okay, he wanted to come on the show. I said, sure, absolutely, 10 o'clock. He said, you know, his girlfriend's usually asleep in the apartment, and he doesn't want to wake her up. So, okay, 10 o'clock on Thursday it is. We agreed on a day. And then right away he's like, well, what do you want to talk about? And, you know, usually when somebody asks me what they want to talk about, it's usually, I usually just give them a general sense of what we want to discuss. I don't want to get into specifics, and nor should I be, because I've been on plenty of shows before, and I never know specifically what they're going to talk about. I know around about, you know, maybe have a general idea of what somebody wants to talk about, but if I know every question that's going to be asked, then it becomes a fixed interview. And so I just gave him like a general sense. And all of a sudden today at like 5 or 6 o'clock, I get a message from him on Facebook about how he doesn't want to talk about Alma, and he's really, you know, he doesn't have time for it, and you know, he's not interested, and just bitching at me like you know, like just, I don't know where it's all coming from. But then I made another combination. I said, okay, you don't want to talk about Alma. Okay, fine. We won't talk about Alma. I know that, you know, Todd banned Alma from the group, didn't want Alma from joining the group, even though several members of the group, including Matt and Andy Bryant out of North Carolina, they wanted Alma to join the group. But no, he didn't want to talk about Alma. He's never wants to talk about Alma. Okay, that's fine. So, boom, the second accommodation that I made for him, okay? That was at 6 o'clock. I'd say, okay, sure, don't worry. I get the feeling he's stressed out. He's just, like, all over the place. He's just getting stressed out, and I'm getting stressed out, and I don't like that. I don't like aggravation. I don't like fucking dealing with people that are going to make me aggravated when I'm a low-drama guy. I don't want aggravation in my life. You know, I'm the lowest key guy. I want to do what I want to do, and I don't want to have other people's aggravation. If you're stressed out or if you're aggravated, I don't want to be around you. I don't give a shit who you are. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're a boss. I don't care if you're a family member. I don't want to be around you. So, okay, I let it slide because, you know, whatever. So I get home today, and my producer, you know, gives me a list of topics, and I sent it over to Todd. And one of the topics, you know, Dana White, I wanted to talk to him about the UFC, and I wanted to talk to Todd about a public altercation, which he was in public coming out of an elevator, minding his own business, and an individual connected to the world of MMA put him in a rear naked choke. Then all of a sudden, Todd flipped out. He's like, "Oh, that's dumb shit. I don't want to talk about that. This is unprofessional. Contact me when you want to talk about something mature." I'm like, "Are you fucking kidding me? You tell me what questions I can and cannot ask when you want it to be on my show. You get to tell me what you are, what you're willing and what you're not willing to talk about. Who the hell are you? Who do you think you are?" I mean, I had Cody Gibson on not more than a couple weeks ago, and I asked Cody Gibson about a bar brawl that he was in where he was admittedly a little bit intoxicated and didn't handle the situation well. And I asked him, and Cody Gibson, who is a legit fighter and, you know, could potentially get back into the UFC, is a Tachi Palace Fighting Championship, answered that question. I've interviewed fighters since 2006, former UFC champions, legends. I've interviewed managers. I've interviewed personalities, you know, businessmen, fill in the blank. And I will ask them whatever the hell I want to ask them, because that's what we do here on Carson's Corner. We ask about a wide range of topics, oftentimes what other people are not willing to ask. And nobody has ever told me what I cannot and can ask on the program. It just doesn't work like that. Okay? Just like the arrogance of this guy is just like unbelievable. You know, you asked to come on my show, and then you get to tell me like, oh, but you get to decide what's dumb and what's not dumb. You get to decide what's immature and what's not immature. You know what, pal? Go back to wherever you came from. Go back to doing whatever you're doing. Because the real ironic part is that he's talked about wanting to come on the show regularly. He's talked about wanting to do podcasts himself. I don't understand this guy. And you know what? I don't want to understand this guy. So I banned him. I banned him from the show. I left the Facebook group, and I never wanted to have any type of communication with this guy again. The nerve of this guy, after I promoted him, after I wrote everything up, I wrote a write-up, I posted his picture, he sent me his picture, I posted in the web player, I promoted the show. Then the last minute, he gets to decide that he's not going to do it after I've compromised for him, I've accommodated for him. Screw yourself, man. I don't want to have anything to do with that. And you know what? I don't want to have anything to do with fight sport. There are some people I speak to there that are good guys, that are easy to deal with. I'll have Oma on. You know, anybody else, you know, Darren, I've had on the program, he's a nice guy, can ask him anything. Maybe Luke Beston, he seems like a nice guy. I'm sorry, this guy Todd, you know, he doesn't have a good reputation, and this is exactly why. And it's really, really disrespectful, and really, really got my goat today, I got to tell you. And I don't like dealing with that, with those people. And I've dealt with hundreds of fighters, folks. I'm telling you, you know. I'm the most patient person, the most nice person you could deal with, you know? I mean, people, John Peretti recently said, I'm a great interviewer. How many times have I dealt with John Peretti? I've dealt with John Peretti for almost 10 years, you know? This guy is a real piece of work. He really is. So I just had to get that off my chest because it really, really bothered me, the arrogance of this man to do that to me. And I feel disrespected. I feel really, really disrespected, and it is. And I don't tolerate that. You know, I don't tolerate that from family members. I don't tolerate that from anybody. You know? So that's that. That's my little rant here, okay? And that's why we don't have a guest in the first hour of the show. But life goes on. Okay, we sometimes don't need guests here on Carson's Corner. And we have a huge, huge amount of news in the world of mixed martial arts. I was so happy today when I found out that the Bisping-GSP fight is off. Dana White was on ESPN Australia. I wonder if it was my good buddy Elvis Sinisek. Elvis Sinisek is a person out, not ESPN, he was on Fox Sports 1, Australia. And he said, listen, Dana White said, you know, I've been waiting for George St. Pierre for 3 years, okay? I'm done waiting. That ship has sailed. Michael Bisping now has to fight Yoel Romero. He's the number one contender, and this fight has to take place. And this is what I've been saying all along. You know, this is what the UFC needs. I mean, you know, there's been some talk about whether or not this is a ruse. There's been some talk about whether, no, this is, I don't think this is a ruse. I don't think Dana White would say this. I mean, even though the UFC butchered this and just botched this completely, you know, the UFC, they have this press conference right before UFC 209. They announce that this fight is taking place. There's no date. There's nothing set in stone. Nobody knows what's going on. You know, Michael Bisping gets knee surgery. George St. Pierre, who knows where he is mentally. He's got anxiety issues, which, you know, look, I'm not criticized. I know a lot of people that have anxiety issues. But, you know, who knows what weight you know, how he is with it. I mean, there's just so many different variables. And so, you know, they announce it, and then immediately everybody's starting to say, you know, I don't want to see this. I mean, I would say the reaction was mixed, but it was mainly negative. People like, you know, I'm not buying this. I'm not buying that Michael Bisping is a legitimate champion of a weight division and he gets to fight somebody who's never had any fights at 185, who's been off for 4 years. It doesn't make sense, and I'm not buying this whole the money fight idea and whatnot. I'm just not. And then you had Luke Rockhold come out the other day, yesterday to his credit, and say, you know, all the middleweight fighters should stand their ground and not fight and basically have a coup and just, you know, hold out until, you know, things start to get back in order again, until, you know, fights start to happen and the division starts to move on. And, you know, I give credit where credit's due. It's like, you know, the UFC, they sent out promotional material. They invested in this. But Dana White, at the end of the day, made the right call and said, listen, I'm sorry. Bisping has to fight Yoel Romero. And the only question is when is this fight going to take place? You know, what's going to happen? When is it going to take place? According to Yoel Romero's manager, Yoel Romero will be ready, you know, sometime in July, late July, August, but they sound like they're ready. I follow Yoel Romero on Instagram. The guy trains every single day. You gotta, you know, take your hat off to him. Michael Bisping, nobody knows what's going on. He hasn't made any comments about this, and he hasn't spoken publicly about this. We don't know. It doesn't sound like Dana White spoke to either of these guys. It just honestly sounds like Dana White's fed up, you know, because he's got this going on. He's got the Floyd Mayweather, Conor McGregor negotiations, which he said he's going to walk away from at some point, which is another good move. He should never have gotten involved with that Pandora's box in the first place. Okay, you got to get things in order. You got to focus and get these fighters and get things, you know, the way they were to a certain extent under the Zuffa era. Now, listen, I understand. I've been very critical of Zuffa and Dana White and whatnot, and I know that in mixed martial arts, you know, the years that there's a lot of variables, and I know logistically putting cards together, how difficult it is with fighters and injuries and you know, all the different variables that go on in a very volatile sport of mixed martial arts. But the idea, you know, under Zuffa, under, you know, pre-WMEIMG, you didn't have this. You had fights that were signed. You had cards that went through. You had pay-per-views. You know, you had more order. Now you don't have any of that. I mean, you have everybody, you know, following Conor McGregor, wanting to call this guy out in boxing, that guy, and wants to move up in weight, and you just, it's all chaos. It really is. A lot of that stems from dissatisfaction, I think. But the main thing that the UFC could do and Dana White could do is have these fighters fight, okay, and start playing hardball. And you look at someone like Michael Bisping and say, you know what? Okay, you know, I can understand that you want to try to make more money with this fight, and you want to say, listen, you know, I stood to make a lot of money with George St. Pierre, so at least if you're going to have me fight Yoel Romero, which I don't think Bisping wanted to fight Yoel Romero at all. In fact, I'm fairly confident of that. Then you gotta pay me money. You gotta make it worth my while. And if they make Bisping an offer and he doesn't comply, then you know what? You gotta threaten to strip him of the belt. Because I said, as soon as Bisping won this belt, everybody flamed me on the forums. Everybody, you know, I was the worst enemy when I said that Bisping should be stripped. People were literally calling me every name in the book. But guess what? You know, one of my points I made, and people, again, I can't emphasize this enough, people were just lambasting me. One of the points I made was that Bisping was not going to fight until October of this year. So it'll be about a year before from the time he won the championship versus Luke Rockhold. And sure enough, what has happened? It'll be a year. It'll be close to a year if Bisping doesn't fight in July. And, you know, he's going to be the holdup, I think. You know, it's not going to be Yoel Romero. He's going to be the holdup. And so it doesn't look like there's that many options now for Bisping. He's got to take this fight. He has to fight this fight. The only question is how much money is it going to make, you know, because if there were options for Bisping, I start out with the fundamental premise that Michael Bisping doesn't want to fight Yoel Romero and would rather fight George St. Pierre, because he admitted that. He admitted that the UFC offered it to him and he took it. You know, he's, you know, these guys like him and Tyron Woodley and others, they want to chase these so-called money fights. And I think that it's bad for the divisions. It's bad for the sport. But now that he doesn't have that, okay, because let's say that he fought George St. Pierre, or let's say that Yoel Romero fought Anderson Silva, or Yoel Romero was forced to fight for an interim title against, you know, Robert Whittaker or fill in the blank. Well, then, you know, those fights are going to produce different results. And guess what? You know, Bisping, that gives Bisping more time. That gives that's more of an advantage to Bisping. He has more options. Now he doesn't have any options. He has to fight Yoel Romero, and hopefully it's sooner rather than later. You know, I think this is good. I think this is what the fans want. And I got to give the UFC credit where credit is due. Okay, I got to give Dana White. He's fed up. He doesn't want this, you know, to be delayed, because it's like the Conor McGregor effect, you know. So that's the big news of the day. That's really what everybody was talking about. And you know what? Look, I mean, I think it's a little bit of arrogance on the part of George St. Pierre to expect everybody to wait until October. Now he's talking about late November. You know, I mean, what is he doing? Why is he waiting till he's 185 pounds and his body can absorb the weight, and you know that'll make it more ideal for him to fight? Is it because I don't think he could go back down to 170. I think those days are over for him. Johnny Hendricks said it on this program that, you know, with the new USADA rules, him not being able to use an IV, George St. Pierre is not going to come down to 170. I don't think he is either. You know, I mean, it's just my personal opinion there. So, you know, he's got to fight 185ers, or he's got to go back down to 170. I would love to see him go back down to 170. I mean, I would love to. A money fight would be him versus Tyron Woodley, which everybody would want to see. There'd be no controversy about that, because George St. Pierre was the welterweight champion, you know, and he was the undisputed welterweight champion. So that's a great fight. That's a money fight. That's a fight that everybody can agree on. You know, Tyron Woodley, George St. Pierre, you know, fill in the blank. So we'll have to see that. We'll have to see what happens with George St. Pierre. But I am just so glad that Michael Bisping finally, at least on the appearance, does not get to have his way. You know, some people were questioning whether or not he was getting preferential treatment. And I think he was. But you know what? It's bound to run out at a certain time. It really is. I mean, you know, the UFC, I think, could only cover for Bisping, Spitzbing, you know, for so long. He's doing a movie now. What is he doing? I was reading in Fighters Only magazine, he's doing, him and Max Holloway are doing the a new 50 Cent movie now, or something like that, which I don't care about. I'm not going to watch anyway. But yeah, he's doing some movies. He's got some buzz. He's got some opportunity right now outside of the UFC, and you know, good for him. I don't really care about that. I mean, I don't really have anything against that. But you know, the division has to move on. I mean, and you know, the idea that Michael Bisping is a needle mover, this is one of the things I keep on hearing, that he's somehow a needle mover, and he's the biggest draw now next to Conor McGregor in the UFC. I don't buy that. I mean, I don't see him. Conor obviously is a whole different level. I mean, you look at all the pay-per-views that are over 1 million. I think with the exception of UFC 100, it's been all, you know, Conor McGregor. I mean, he like 5 or 6 out of the pay-per-views that had over 1 million buys were Conor McGregor. So you can't deny the star power that Conor McGregor brings and will bring, will continue to bring. You know, unless he loses, unless he gets beat pretty decisively, which is entirely possible in this sport, then, you know, his stock goes down. Everybody's stock goes down. But I don't think Bisping, people are not excited to see Michael Bisping fight. They're just not. He's not that exciting of a fighter, really. He's not a knockout guy. He's more of a guy that, you know, he's got good strikes. He's good everywhere. But he has difficulty, you know, against wrestlers being taken down. He hasn't really gotten that many knockouts. And so it's not like watching Conor McGregor. Or it wasn't like watching, you know, Ronda Rousey, you know, who you looked for that finish in the beginning of the fight. You looked for the Conor McGregor knockout. You know, you look for these things. Bisping is just not like that, you know. But nonetheless, he's got some steam, and he's doing movies, and hopefully they lock him right in the cage with – who the hell is this? Oh, Dan Baker. Lock him right in the cage with Yoel Romero. Okay. Dan said he can't call in tonight. He had something to come up. That's no problem. No problem. We'll have to do our UFC preview, which I will do. I will analyze the UFC card coming up in a little while. But we got Bellator to talk about. Bellator 179. And as I told you at the beginning of the show, it looks like MVP is out of this card. And I was really, really disappointed when I heard about that, because Michael Venom Page is definitely a rising star, and he's definitely someone that, you know, I mean, his last fight versus Gonzalez wasn't really exciting to watch, but, you know, he's a knockout artist. He's flamboyant. He's outspoken. He's got everything that Bellator wants and needs to really make a star. And they have one in Michael Venom Page. He could potentially be a draw. He's not there yet because he hasn't fought the level of competition that he needs to fight. But there are plenty of people now in the Bellator welterweight division that could really, really give Michael Page, who, by the way, is on an 11-fight win streak, is unbeaten, his toughest test. You know, like I said, Bellator has gotten a really, really good welterweight division through free acquisitions and through, you know, just treating their fighters good and whatnot. And we got a chance to talk to a couple Bellator welterweights who are fighting, who are going to be the main event at Wembley Arena this coming Friday. Yeah, Friday on Spike TV. It's very, very exciting to see this. The main event is Paul Daly, of course, versus Rory McDonald. And we got a chance to ask Paul a couple questions and Rory one question. And the winner of this fight is going to fight the winner of Lorenz Larkin versus Diego Lima, or Douglas Lima, taking place on Madison Square Garden card June 24th, I want to say, at Bellator. I will be at that card. I'm sure a lot of people will be as Bellator makes their second visit to pay-per-view. So right here, you know, you have basically a number one contender fight between Paul Daly and Rory McDonald. Now, let's start with Paul Daly, because I asked Paul about Rory McDonald and his strategy. And I got to tell you, I think a lot of people realize that Rory McDonald's strategy is going to be to basically wrestle him and employ a wrestling-based attack to get Paul Daly discouraged and get him aggravated. And that's where I see the fight going. I mean, Rory McDonald said that he has no problem standing with Paul Daly, and he does have good stand-up. He's well-rounded. There's no question about that. So, for you know, he could hang in there, but I think clearly Daly has the power. And if he did hang in there he would basically expose himself to Daly's power, and that would tip the fight in Daly's favor. But Rory McDonald is not going to do that. I don't think he's going to do that. So I asked Paul Daly, what do you think? Are you wary of Rory McDonald using this wrestling-based attack basically to get you out of your game plan? And this is what he said.
Your next question comes from the line of Bob Carson. Carson's Corner, your line is live.
Hi, thank you. My first question is for Paul. Paul, Rory is someone who can obviously fight both standing and on the ground. Are you at all wary of him potentially employing a wrestling-based game plan, perhaps with the goal of frustrating you?
You know, Rory can do whatever he feels, or he can try to do whatever he feels is necessary to win the fight. I am confident in fighting everywhere. The assessment people make of me when it comes to the wrestling and the ground game is it kind of works in my favor, because I think I'm overlooked as far as my strengths on the ground and my record against guys that are strong on the ground. You know, it is what it is. He will try and do what he has to do to survive, and I will do what I need to do to take him out. I'm not worried about anything or what tactics he may try to employ. I'm there to fight.
Yeah, see, there you go. I think that's going to be a real story of the fight is, you know, how I just don't see Rory being able to beat Paul Daly standing in this fight. And I don't see Paul Daly, because Paul Daly is a smart fighter. I mean, yeah, he says he's underrated when it comes to his ground game and says that he could fight everywhere. But the reality is that he's not going to – I don't think he's going to go in there and take too many risks. He's not going to go in there like he did against Brennan Ward and, you know, throw flying knees and throw a lot of kicks. I don't think he threw a lot of kicks in the Ward fight, but he's going to, you know, stand there and try to, you know, hit Rory with some hard shots and knock him out. Because – yeah, Brennan Ward was a collegiate wrestler. I believe he was a wrestling champion. But Rory McDonald, in my opinion, is better at takedowns. He's better at keeping guys on the ground. And that's going to be Rory's ticket to win this fight. So, again, it comes down to what type of strategy he has. And, you know, he has to be concerned going into that fight about getting taken down and Rory doing enough on the ground to keep the fight on the ground. And then all of a sudden they're going to separate them and the referee, you know, it's almost going to be like a repeat of King Mo versus Rampage, the first fight that they had, you know? So that was really, really a very, very good question. I got to pat myself on the back on that one. And secondly, you know, you got to wonder about Rory too, about the nose, the nose injury, just breaking his nose in the brutal fashion that he did, because that's got to be on his mind, you know, psychologically. You know, I'm sorry, it just has to. And so, you know, he's not going to want to get into wars. Although, you know, Rory may be just one of these guys that mentally overcomes it. He says he's a warrior and he's there to fight. And he may be the outlier. I don't know, though. I mean, Jesus, you know, Paul Daly kind of criticized him because there was one reporter from Wombat News or something like that who said that Rory hadn't been beaten in 7 years or something like that. And Paul Daly's like, no, he was beaten by Robbie Lawler. So, you know, and then what made headlines is when Paul Daly said that he quit, said that Rory McDonald quit. And then Rory said, no, I you know, actually was knocked down. I took a knee and then, you know, the ref stopped it. So it was a little bit of a semantic game there. But nonetheless, I wonder if that's going to be a factor in his fighting going forward. We'll see. You know, he said that he's been training in TriStar. He said that, you know, the nose has not been an issue for him in training. And so that's going to be a very, very intriguing fight. Rory McDonald's first fight in Bellator since, you know, not being re-signed by the UFC. And that was going to be one of my other questions, too, is does Rory McDonald really feel any extra pressure about the notion of him being a big fish in a small pond? You know, him being the guy that's supposed to win and supposed to do well versus Bellator competition. The guy that beat Tyron Woodley, the current champion, you know, had fight of the year, has beaten Carlos Condit, beaten the very best at welterweight in the world. And he actually was kind of asked that question by another reporter, and he basically said, no, there's no pressure at all. So I had an opportunity to ask Paul Daly about another fight of his, the Brennan Ward fight, which was a highlight reel knockout, and really established Paul as a top contender, I think, in Bellator, and really exposed him to, you know, a large audience, because, you know, Bellator 170, I think it peaked at about 2.2 million viewers. You know, Tito and Chael's a huge, huge card. And everybody was excited to see that fight. And everybody knew it was going to end in a knockout, and it sure did. So this is Paul Daly on whether or not the Brennan Ward fight was a signature fight for his career. And your last fight featured absolutely terrifying and amazing knockout win over the very tough Brennan Ward. I mean, you've had big wins in Bellator before, but with a large audience watching and such a spectacular finish, it felt like, you know, you truly announced yourself as a top contender in that moment. In a career full of devastating knockouts and memorable moments, would you describe that as your signature performance thus far?
It was a fantastic knockout, you know. The crowd was amazing. It being on the Tito's retirement fight, you know, I felt the energy from the crowd before and after the fight. I have a similar knockout with exactly the same move. So it's not something that I didn't expect to happen. But, yeah, it was good because Brendan, as well as being a nice guy, is super tough. You know, he won the middleweight tournament. He's been in there with some tough guys. He fought well over in Japan at Rising. You know, he has knockout power. He's a collegiate level wrestler. You know, he's a tough kid. So it was good to get a win over Brendan Ward.
Yeah, that was good. Like I said, a highlight reel knockout. Bellator really has been known over the last year or so for being the place where you have devastating knee KOs. And, of course, you had Michael Venom Page versus Cyborg Santos, where he fractured his skull. And, you know, you have Paul Daly, and hopefully there'll be many more as we see. And, you know, not just obviously relegated to the UFC. You just had recently Edson Barboza, when Edson Barboza just obliterated Beneil Dariush with a knee. So very, very good to see that. And, you know, you have to look hard at Paul Daly's career, because Paul Daly has almost 40 wins, folks. And I'm sure depending upon, you know, which database you look at, he has probably over 40 wins. So, and then he's got kickboxing experience as well. I had the chance to speak to Rory McDonald, and I asked him about his fights in the UFC. I mentioned the victory over Tyron Woodley, the current champion, Carlos Condit, and whether or not he feels that his victories were overlooked or underappreciated by the fans and the UFC alike. So here is that from the Bellator 179 conference call this Tuesday. And your last fight, and Rory, you know, even though you had a couple losses towards the end of your UFC run, one of those was named Fight of the Night or Fight of the Year, and immediately beforehand, you had beaten the current champion, Tyron Woodley, fairly decisively. And on top of that, you defeated Damian Maia, who many people consider to be the top contender at 170. Do you feel that people, either fans, the UFC, or both, have somehow disregarded those huge wins?
That's just the nature of the sport. You're only as good as your last performance. And people are easy to write off fighters if they have a bad loss or a bad outing, you know, and they think that they're done or, you know, things like that. It's just a natural thing for critics to say and think. So I never really put too much worry into that. Obviously, I feel like I have a lot more to prove in my career. And May 19th will be the start of that.
Her Bible and a letter from him.